Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Reaction to the killing of Woburn police officer John McGuire intensified today. Police say McGuire was shot to death last week by a repeat offender who'd been released on parole. And today, under intense scrutiny, Parole Board Chairman Mark Conrad offered his sympathy to the McGuire family.
My feelings go out to the McGuire family at this time. But being a police officer for two decades, this is tough on me and my agency.
But for many, sympathy just isn't enough. A group of lawmakers today reintroduced a bill they say would have kept McGuire's alleged killer, Dominic Cinelli, behind bars. The proposal is called Melissa's Bill, in honor of Melissa Gozel, a 27-year-old who was raped and murdered by a repeat offender in 1999. Melissa's father, Les, spoke at the State House today.
Our priorities are wrong in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and I feel that the energy is changing, and that I think today we're going to get a different set of priorities. It's too bad a trooper had to get murdered, an innocent person, a trooper had to get murdered to create that energy.
So, should parole board rules be changed in Massachusetts? Should repeat violent offenders have no choice but to serve their entire sentences? Is this the way to curb recidivism, or is it a denial of the possibility of rehabilitation? That is today's talker on Radio Boston. So give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now with more about Melissa's bill is WBUR Statehouse reporter Steve Brown. Hi there, Steve.
Hi, Meghna.
So we're going to hear from one of the proponents of Melissa's bill in just a moment, but basically outline to us what the law or what the bill would do if passed.
Well, this bill would require repeat violent offenders to serve their full sentence before they would be paroled. 20 years would mean 20 years. A life sentence would be just that, behind bars until you die. Now, supporters of this bill are convinced that had it been on the books, Officer Jack McGuire would still be alive. Now, at the news conference this morning, Ipswich Republican Brad Hill said they are frustrated that this bill has languished in the legislature for a decade and that Officer McGuire was killed by a violent repeat offender.
It didn't have to happen. We had legislation in place, and we've had it in place for the last decade, that would have prevented the tragedy that took place in Woburn. However, that bill never came to the floor for a vote.
Now, they say that the bill only gets as far as the Judiciary Committee, and then it doesn't see the light of day. And Representative Hill says he hasn't been told publicly nor privately what their concerns are. And I've put out some calls to the House and Senate chairs of the committee, but so far I haven't heard back from them.
I understand that this bill has actually failed twice before in the past, but there's been a lot of reaction to the death of Officer McGuire. Have you heard of any other ideas regarding how parole is granted or the parole board laws here in Massachusetts?
Well, Officer McGuire's death has certainly put this in the forefront. House Speaker Robert DeLeo discussed this yesterday. He indicated that anyone who has been given three life sentences, and that's what Dominic Cinelli had been given, should not be eligible for parole. He said he supposes that there could be a legislative remedy, such as if a person gets more than one life sentence, that person would not be able to get parole. He adds that's his gut reaction. He says he's had some initial conversations with House members about how to approach the issue.
Well, we know that Governor Deval Patrick has asked for a review of that 2008 parole board decision that led to the release of Dominic Cinelli. But what else has the governor said about this case?
He's not saying too much. Outside his office yesterday in his first public comments about Officer McGuire's death, he said he's obviously upset. He added that he wants to read that report that's being compiled by the Executive Office of Public Safety before taking any action.
I think the thing that, for me, gets lost in this, and I was thinking about it at the funeral last week, is that we jump immediately to the recriminations and we forget that there's a human tragedy here and a family that's been upended, and that certainly was clear for all to see at the funeral, and an incredible tribute that was shown to the to Officer McGuire and to his family.
Now, the governor says that after he looks at that review, he will then take whatever actions necessary, but he didn't indicate what that might be.
WBUR State House reporter Steve Brown. Steve, thank you very much.
Thanks, Magna.
So, listeners, we are talking about renewed calls on Beacon Hill for legislation that would make repeat violent offenders ineligible for parole. Is this the way to go to curb recidivism? Should people who serve, who have been convicted of three life sentences, ever have the chance to get out of jail early? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. What are your thoughts on the possibility of parole in Massachusetts? Well, we're joined now by Representative George Peterson. He's a state representative from Grafton. He's a Republican, and he's behind one of the forces behind this new bill, Melissa's Law. Representative Peterson, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Magna.
So tell us briefly, what's your take on why, first of all, this bill, which has failed twice, why you think that this is the time now to try and really make some concrete changes to the way parole is granted in Massachusetts?
Well, unfortunately, it seems that the way the legislature acts is actually reacts to, in some cases, terrible situations. The death of Officer McGuire could actually be the catalyst to be able to move this bill forward in the next legislative session. Unfortunately, a lot of times bills, good pieces of legislation, languish for many years up here on the Hill until there is a tragedy, unfortunately.
So what do you make of what House Speaker Robert DeLeo has said? I mean, he prefers the idea, as Steve Brown told us, to deny parole for people who are sentenced to more than one life term. So they could have committed one crime, but it's not necessarily that they're repeat offenders. It's just the gravity of the crime that would make them ineligible for parole.
Well, this bill is not, in essence, the three strikes you're out. But what it does say is if you have a criminal record, have been convicted twice of violent felonies, that if you are now out on the street, commit a third crime and are convicted, you will not be eligible for parole and that you will have to serve the maximum sentence that you receive. So if it's 15 to life, you will be there for life. If it's 15 to 25 years, you'll be there for 25 years. It doesn't say that you will be locked up for life, depending on the felony and the charge and the sentence. But and a third time, the third strike, you should not be allowed to be paroled. It just doesn't make any sense that a individual that was convicted and had three life sentences was allowed to be paroled.
Mm-hmm.
Especially looking at the gentleman's record.
Right. And you mentioned that you're referring to Dominic Sinelli here.
Yes.
I mean, just to remind listeners, Dominic Sinelli, he got a 6-0 unanimous vote to release him out on parole back in 2008. He had a career of crime behind him, including attempted murder, armed robbery charges, and two prison escapes. So is that the kind of thing that you're looking at? I mean, what about folks who have lesser crimes who, as you said, may only be have to serve 15 years and who after 5 years show definite improvement and that maybe they are ready to be reintroduced into society?
Well, I would think that they would have shown that propensity in the first two times that they were convicted and were serving time. The third time is you will no longer have that advantage to be able to say, okay, third time, now I get it. Now I'm going to make my amend my ways. Third time is not going to be a charm. It is going to mean that you have to serve your sentence. You will not be eligible for parole. And I think most people that understand the system of penalties and reward, that on a third strike, in essence, a third conviction of a violent felony crime, that you're not going to change your ways, and at least you're going to serve the maximum sentence. It's truth in sentencing.
Representative Peterson, please stand by because I want to introduce one more voice into this conversation. It's Patty Guerin. She's director of the Prisoner Rights Clinic at Northeastern University and an attorney with Stern, Shapiro, Weisberg, and Guerin. Patty Guerin, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So I should state that you also run a program there at Northeastern where law students represent people who are appearing in front of the parole board. And one of your students, actually, Representative Dominic Sinelli, when he was granted parole in 2008.
That's correct.
Okay, so just I want to put that out there for full disclosure. But what's your take on this renewed push on Beacon Hill to possibly, you know, prevent people like Mr. Sinelli from ever appearing in front of a parole board at all?
I think that it's always problematic when legislation gets introduced in reaction to a tragedy, to an extreme incident. The parole board has been exceptionally successful in their work. They have an extremely low recidivism rate in Massachusetts. They are very, very careful about who they parole. And I'm very concerned that legislation that gets introduced now is not what we want. What we want is legislation that's based on an evidence-based practice and that looks at all the evidence about what works best and drafts legislation responsive to what works best. And this kind of passing legislation in a frenzy has proven to be problematic over the years in all jurisdictions. It results in problematic legislation.
Well, the legislation, I mean, we don't know if it's going to pass, but if it does this time, you know, in response to the death of Officer McGuire, that may be, quote, in a frenzy. But it's come up on Beacon Hill two other times. So this has been an issue that's existed in Massachusetts. I guess I just want to ask you about your thoughts about specifically what the legislation is proposing to do. Do you agree with the idea that if a person has committed three violent crimes, that the third time they should serve their entire sentence?
I would not want to make that statement across the board for all people. I think the important thing about sentencing in Massachusetts is that it's based on individuals. It's based on the individual crime, and parole is also based on individuals. I think it's important to look at the case of Mr. Sinelli and realize that the reason he was eligible for parole and the reason he was paroled has everything to do with the sentencing judge and the two district attorney's offices that were involved in negotiating the pleas. He had a series of crimes. Some occurred in Middlesex. Some occurred in Suffolk. And the district attorney's offices and the judge at the time agreed that this man was appropriate for life sentence with parole eligibility at 15 years. They could have strung them all one after the other and kept him in prison forever and made them consecutive. But they did not do that. They did not go to trial. They entered plea agreements, and that's what made Mr. Sinelli parole eligible. He was parole eligible, and when our parole board saw him, he had been doing extraordinarily well for the past 15 years in prison.
You mentioned the district attorney's office, the Middlesex DA, but at the time when Mr. Sinelli appeared in front of the parole board, if I understand correctly, Middlesex DA Gerald Leone said his office wasn't even informed that parole hearing was happening, and by law he had to be informed. So, I mean, there's many details in this case.
There's details that need to be looked at, but one thing that's important to note with respect to the district attorneys in saying, you know, this was what the problem was, is that this case was unusual because there were two DA's offices involved mm-hmm. in it. And it sounds like, from what we've all read, that the parole board did not notify Middlesex, but they absolutely notified Suffolk. Mm-hmm. Suffolk DA's office received notification, and they chose not to show up. They even had an assistant district attorney at another hearing on that very same day with my students. They did not appear at the Sinelli hearing. So Middlesex wasn't notified. Suffolk was. Suffolk chose not to show up. But the DA showing up is not the dispositive factor. It's how the person has done in prison for 15 years. And Mr. Sinelli had done extremely well.
On that point, Patty Guerin, let me actually turn back to Representative George Peterson of Grafton here. What do you make of what Professor Guerin is saying, that it's not just so much the individual or the individual crime, but the individual him or herself, that, you know, every time the law looks at someone and says, you get another chance. We kind of wipe the slate clean, and for this particular crime and this particular sentence, you can appear in front of the parole board.
Well, I have a problem with that. I think on the first two convictions, you have that opportunity. We're talking about an individual on his third conviction of a violent felony. And then at that point in time, if it's 15 to life or 15 to 25, they serve the maximum sentence without parole. If the individuals on the street that are committing violent crimes understand that the third strike, the third time that you violate the rest of the citizens of the Commonwealth in a violent fashion, that you will not be paroled or eligible for parole, and that you will have to meet and serve the sentence that you are given.
We've got
And I think that becomes a deterrent. For years, I have heard that we cannot reinstate the death penalty in Massachusetts because when somebody who is a capital offender and receives a life sentence will never be able to kill again in the streets of the Commonwealth.
You said the word deterrent, but it also makes me wonder if they lose the possibility of parole, do they lose the motivation for good behavior?
No, I think on the second time in serving time, that they would say, you know, I come back in here again, I'm not going to have the ability to right myself, per se.
Mm-hmm. Representative Peterson and Professor Guerin, stand by. We've got a ton of comments and a lot of callers who want to join us. John on our website says, repeat violent offenders shouldn't get paroled. And he says, I'm a liberal Democrat. Tomer, also on our website, says, I think there is a tendency to fall back on more conservative, reactive, and politically beneficial solutions to crime in this country. We have one of the highest incarceration rates in the world, and it seems to me that denying parole for repeat offenders is the easy, albeit more expensive, way to go. Let's go to Framingham and take a call. John's on the line. Welcome to Radio Boston, John.
Thanks for taking my call. I mean, I agree with what was said by the last person you mentioned on email. We don't have one of the highest. We have the highest incarceration rate in the world. We have 2 million people in prison in this country. And it's very easy and simple to think that sending people to prison and keeping them there for long periods of time is going to solve problems. It doesn't. The fact of the matter is we need to figure out how to lower the number of people in prison, and one of the solutions is parole and effective parole supervision. I completely agree with Patty Guerin that making policy behind a tragedy like this is a horrendous idea. We want to give prisoners an incentive to rehabilitate themselves and give them hope that they can redeem themselves. And we need to reduce the prison population.
John, let me get some responses from our guests. Thank you so much for your call. Representative Peterson, go ahead.
Yeah, John, I would agree with you, and they have two opportunities prior to that third conviction to be able to redeem themselves, to pay their debt to society, to turn themselves around, to take advantage of the educational facilities in the correctional facilities, and to become a productive citizen for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. The one thing that Patty talked about rushing to file legislation to be knee-jerk reactive, this is a piece of legislation that has been around for 10 years, has literally never gotten out of the Judiciary Committee, and even had a floor debate. And that's what we're looking for. At least let us have the debate to argue pro, con, what's effective, what's not, and have that debate. But that debate has been shut out to this point for over 10 years. And sadly, it only really comes up and gets some movement, some recognition by the press when there is a tragedy.
Patty Guerin at Northeastern University, I have to ask you, you've mentioned rehabilitation, and our caller did as well. What evidence do you have in your research that rehabilitation versus making people serve their entire sentences works in Massachusetts?
All of the statistics show that persons who are leave the prison system on parole do extremely well, and they do so much better than people who are kept in prison and wrap up their sentence behind the wall. So parole supervision is an extremely important tool to public safety. It reduces recidivism. It saves on costs of incarceration. And with respect to whatever happened in Mr. Sinelli's case, I think an important thing to be looking at, as opposed to simply did the district attorney's office get notice and you know, why was he given a sentence that made him parole eligible, is what happened when he got into the community, because my guess is going to be that he was very appropriately parole eligible because he had had no disciplinary reports for 15 years, no use of any kind of controlled substance for 15 years. He had a strong parole plan. He had family support.
And yet, on the other hand, he was a repeat violent offender.
But what happened to him when he got into the community? Mm-hmm. And that should be an important part of the investigation. What resources do we have out there for people?
One of the things that I would ask about the statistics that Patty talks about is, are these people that on the first and second offense that are paroled and are doing very well, or are we looking at oranges to oranges, apples to apples? A third-time serious violent offender with a long history of violence, when they are paroled, what is their track record under parole? Because I would say that if you look at apples to apples, and I don't, and I don't have specifics in front of me to be able to quote.
Well, maybe Professor Guerin does, Representative Peterson. Let's give her a chance to respond.
I don't have specifics. What I would say is that situation that you describe is such a rarity, that somebody who has that kind of record and then is paroled, that I'm not sure there'll be meaningful statistics. I don't know them. The statistics I have are, in general, how very, very successful and powerful parole is in this state.
I want to carve out a little more room for some of our many callers. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking about the possibility of changes in parole laws in Massachusetts. Should repeat violent offenders be forced to serve their entire sentences? Deborah is calling from Milton. Welcome to Radio Boston, Deborah.
Thank you.
What's your thought?
So my comment is this. Addiction and mental health issues are medical problems that need to be treated like diabetes and heart disease. And the question that I have is, what is the commitment that society has to giving folks treatment for their mental health and addiction issues when they get out of prison or jail? And what is the commitment to addiction treatment services and support? So for me, the question isn't whether or not to parole folks, because recovery is a powerful experience. People can go on to live really productive lives and serve the community. I work with folks all the time who are out in the community in recovery, having served time in prison, and are really productive members of society. And so my question is, you know, as a society, I think we need to ask ourselves, what is the level of commitment that we want to give to folks who come out of prison?
Deborah, let's let a guest pick that up. Thank you so much for your call. Representative Peterson, I mean, what's your response to that? Because people here are looking at the lives that offenders have beyond bars.
Right. Our level of commitment, especially on substance abuse, which is one of the many causes of some of the crimes that are committed out there, not necessarily violent crimes as much as theft and that type of situation to generate the cash to be able to purchase the drugs or alcohol, has to be as strong as anyone that wants to go in and into recovery and work towards that goal. Now, Mr. Sinelli has had 15 years in prison. To my knowledge, did not have a drug or alcohol situation, but within a year and a half, 2 years, was back on the street and back to his old ways of carrying a firearm, robbing stores and holding people at gunpoint, and then using that firearm in a deadly fashion. He's had two other opportunities to show the error in his ways and to become a productive citizen, and this is a separate issue outside of this question of parole for a third-time violent offender.
Well, Patty Guerin, your response to that, I mean, my guess is that you see that support for offenders after they leave prison is not where it should be.
It's not. We could provide so much more support by way of mental health treatment, alcohol and substance abuse treatment, job training, vocational training for people who are getting out of prison, which would be a huge boost to public safety and lower recidivism and help people tremendously. Mr. Sinelli was an addict for most of his life. He was an addict by the time he was 16. Every single one of his crimes was drug-related, and he had made a remarkable recovery during his last 15 years in prison. Remarkable.
Professor Guerin,
so
let me...
That was the motivating factor for our parole board.
Let me just ask you this question. This has kind of been nagging on my mind, because he might have been a model a person in jail, but at the end of the day, Officer John McGuire also ended up dead. So is there a time at which justice needs to take a backseat to the potential for rehabilitation?
This is a complete tragedy. There's no other way to describe it. It's a heartbreaking tragedy that every single person involved in the system wishes could have been prevented. I do say, however, that I do not think that there is any law you can pass that will guarantee that there will never be a mistake. And as tragic as this is, I don't want to see laws passed that sweep everybody into the same kind of consideration for parole or for their future.
I want to get a couple more callers in here, if I may, Professor Guerin. Nadine is calling from Watertown. Welcome to Radio Boston, Nadine.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment. I'm a psychiatric nurse, and I'm in the business of working with psychiatric patients, most of whom are dual diagnosed. And even when it's wonderful to see the very few that do go into recovery, I find for the most part that it's difficult for a lot of them to recover. For people in prison that are habitual repeaters, I find that to be, I think that they are incorrigible and that they have this mindset where they find it very difficult once out in the community, regardless of how well they were behaved in a controlled environment. Once out in the community without the supports, which your former guest was talking about, but which is highly unlikely for it to happen in this day and age and economy, that they're going to just fall back on what their old ways were. I mean, if they go into jail or prison for a violent offense the second time, that's a second chance.
Mm-hmm.
That's a second chance.
Nadine, I'm sorry to interrupt. We've just got a minute and a half here to go, but thank you so much for your call. Patty Guerin at Northeastern University, director of the Prisoner Rights Clinic. I mean, what do you make of Nadine has to say, that some people are just hard to rehabilitate?
I have to agree, some people are hard, but I can say in the 17 years I've been supervising the Northeastern students, we have had many, many, many people with very, very difficult drug and alcohol problems who have made complete recoveries and done extraordinarily well in the community. And in 17 years of representing lifers, this is the first time one of our clients has committed another extremely violent offense like this. So it is a tragedy, but it is a rarity.
Representative Peterson, I read also that parole board's own records show that just 17% of convicts had their parole rescinded in 2009 for violations, and 78% of parolees in Massachusetts successfully complete their post-release community supervision. So, I mean, given those kind of statistics...
And I think that's a wonderful thing. That's a wonderful success story. But we have to look at sometimes the one or two anomalies. In essence, Officer McGuire, who lost his life with a person that had not been convicted once, not convicted twice, but a third conviction and had received three life sentences. Mm. I think at some point society has to say, you've run out of chances, you will serve your sentence.
This is the third time that Melissa's bill has come up on Beacon Hill. Do you think that there's more political motivation this time to actually see this bill passed?
I do believe that there will be more as people become engaged and hear more about not just the McGuire case, but the legislation, have a clear understanding of where we're going. I think we have at least a shot of getting it out of committee and having a floor debate, so that we can argue the pros and cons of this.
Representative George Peterson of Grafton, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Patty Guerin, director of the Prisoner Rights Clinic at Northeastern University and an attorney with Stern, Shapiro, Weisberg, and Guerin, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you.
After the break, the cutting edge of connectomics. And by cutting, we really mean cutting, as in slices of brain. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.